This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This week, the federal government inaugurates a new initiative in the fight against obesity. Communities in Michigan and Massachusetts are the first to receive federal grants to encourage healthier lifestyles. Native American tribes in Michigan will use some of the money to urge a return to traditional foods like wild rice and fish. Boston area schools will urge parents to limit children's television time to 2 hours a day. It's all part of the Healthy Communities Initiative, and HHS Secretary Tommy Thompson hopes Congress will give him another $125 million next year to fund similarly innovative programs around the country. And that is but one front in the Battle of the Bulge. There are others. An ever-increasing number of Americans are turning to surgical procedures and expensive drugs to try to lose weight. We're talking about drugs such as Xenical and Meridia, and procedures such as gastric bypass and stomach bands. Later in this program, we'll mark a quarter century since Jimmy Carter, Menachem Begin, and Anwar Sadat negotiated the Camp David Accords. But first, our fourth and final show in our series on obesity, and we'll focus on what science can and cannot do to help us lose weight. If you've tried some of these options, call and tell us your story. If you're thinking about them, call if you have questions. Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And the email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And joining us now by phone from her office in Boston is Ellen Ruppel Schell. She teaches journalism at Boston University, and she's the author of The Hungry Gene, The Science of Fat and the Future of Thin. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Neil.
Scientists are not only looking for ways to help us lose weight, scientists also help us understand why we get fat in the first place. Does science support the idea that some people are more prone to weight gain than others?
Absolutely. In fact, in the last decade, science has made it irrefutable that some of us are more than others likely to gain weight in a certain environment.
And that is based on genetics?
Yes, it is. About 1994, there was the discovery of a gene, first in mice, and then in 1997, a similar gene was discovered in humans that produced a substance called leptin. And humans that cannot produce leptin eat uncontrollably. Now, this is a very rare trait, but what it showed was that genes, to some degree, direct the biology of eating, which is something that we thought was true for a long time, but then we had proof of it.
Now, if genetics can play a role in us getting fat, what does it mean for treatment and prevention for getting thin?
Well, you know, it's very interesting. What we're finding are more and more hormones. Recently, for example, just last week, there was an announcement of another new hormone called PPY, a peptide that's produced in the intestine that helps regulate appetite. In fact, that helps control appetite. So the question is, if we give people who lack this peptide, who have less of it than others, an infusion of this peptide, will they decrease their eating? The finding in this particular study, which was a very small study, was yes. Obese people did decrease their eating at their next meal when they were given this hormone that was lacking in them. So it's an important finding, but it's not the solution.
I was going to say, I mean, some people will read a story like that in the newspaper and say, glad that's over with. Don't have to worry about that anymore. This is going to be years, if ever, right?
Well, yes. And of course, you know, we thought the same thing about leptin. Unfortunately, Neil, the other shoe always does drop. We don't know what the hope is for PPY. What we do know is that there's a whole lot of hormones and peptides and genes involved in weight regulation, and we know that they differ in all of us due to our genetics. But we also know that increasing numbers of us are losing our ability to control our appetite in this environment. So where we really need to focus now is wisely where that grant you just talked about, Tommy Franks, is focusing, and that is changing our culture and our environment to match our genes.
And we've done other programs on those issues in this series, but I wanted to focus for a second on the business of obesity science. Mm-hmm. Given the potential for profit from a truly successful diet pill, this has to be a huge focus for pharmaceutical companies, doesn't it?
Oh, every major pharmaceutical company in the world has a position on this and a research effort on obesity. It is, as one scientist told me when I did the research for The Hungry Gene, it's a trillion-dollar disease. They assume with 1.1 billion people around the world overweight. This is not just an American problem. In fact, America is not even where it's the worst. It's an international problem growing around the world. So it's a huge, huge market for a potential drug, so, or a series of drugs.
Well, with that incentive, should we be hopeful that some sort of magic bullet is going to be found?
There'll never be a magic bullet because it's so complicated. Many, many genes are involved. Many, many hormones are involved. And Mother Nature wants us to eat. It's very hard to keep us from eating. It's very easy to get us to eat, but it's very hard. So when we tamp it down in one place in the brain, it pops up in another place in the brain. So it's extremely difficult. It's a very hard problem. Still, scientists are pursuing it frantically because it is the pot of gold. It's a very, very lucrative pursuit.
In the meantime, without that perfect pill, is it your sense that people are pursuing medical solutions in any way, that they're becoming increasingly popular?
Well, certainly bariatric surgery, stomach stapling, as some people call it, or other forms of that, gastric bypass surgery, is increasingly popular, so much so that surgeons are scrambling to learn the technique. And, in fact, they're pushing it down now as young as childhood, performing these surgeries, or at least there's discussion of performing it in children. Because of the pandemic, the epidemic, people don't know what else to do.
Mm-hmm. And this is a solution for as I've read in the descriptions of it, we get involved in complicated discussions of who's overweight and who's obese and what those terms mean, but this is for the morbidly obese.
These are for people 100 pounds or more overweight, and this is for people whose health is really being held hostage to their weight. They're suffering from diabetes, heart disease, other what we call comorbidities of obesity, so they're pretty sick when they go in for this surgery. Not everybody, but oftentimes they are.
Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's get a caller on the line. Elle is with us from Beaverton, Oregon.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
This is Elle in sunny Beaverton. And I was one of those people who tried Orlistat when it was just a trial drug and had terrible complications from it, and tried every weight loss diet out there. I have had a stack of books a feet, foot and a half tall, trying to lose weight. And finally, at age 58, my doctor said, you have diabetes, you have hypertension, your knees are going bad, you can't climb stairs anymore, you need to do something.
Mm.
And suggested I look into bariatric surgery. I did that in January of 2001, started researching bariatric surgery, and in July of 2001, at 280 pounds, I'm 5'9", I had a biliopancreatic diversion with duodenal switch, which is another form of gastric bypass. And today, just a little over 2 years later, I weigh 136 pounds. I went from a size 22 to a size 8. I no longer need insulin. I no longer need hypertensive medications. I can play with my grandkids. I can ride my bicycle for 5 miles a day and do. And I am a much healthier person.
Are there any negative side effects?
Yes, there are some negative side effects. When you have a large percentage of your bowel removed, you don't process food as much as you did before. And that is part of the surgery. Part of what makes it work is that your body doesn't absorb the food. So one of the side effects is I need to take a lot of vitamins and minerals to make sure that I get a sufficient to keep healthy.
Mm-hmm. But other than that, you feel well and you can eat all kinds of foods?
Hey, I can eat as much as I want to. It just isn't very much anymore. I have a stomach the size of a banana. That's about 7 ounces. So I can eat what a normal small person would normally eat.
Well, congratulations, Elle, and I wish you good continued good luck with that.
I hope that anybody who is thinking about it does look into it. It is a wonderful thing. Thanks a lot, Neil.
Thanks very much for the call. And Ellen Ruppel-Schell, one of the things you have to realize is, as Elle pointed out, you're taking a large part of your your intestine out, this is not an easy or quick decision people should make.
There are many varieties of there are several varieties of gastric bypass surgery. That is one variety. It's not as widely used now as some others, and it is very dramatic. In my book, I describe such a surgery quite graphically, and so people can get a feeling for what these people are willing to do to control their weight. The reason I opened my book with that was because I wanted people to know that people like the caller are really quite determined to lose weight. It's not as if they lack quote-unquote willpower or they're lazy. This person who called clearly wasn't. She was very determined, and in fact, she was willing to sacrifice part of her anatomy, undergo drastic surgery. The complications of this are things like anemia and osteoporosis, something roughly 1% or maybe somewhat less than that die from complications from the surgery. It's really quite a drastic thing to do. So this is an example of what these people are willing to go through, and it's not a simple matter of gluttony and sloth. They really are in a special circumstance.
Now, in addition to talking to your doctor about this, where might people go to do some research if they wanted to?
Well, there are plenty of websites available for this, but I would caution people because many of them are promotional. This is a very lucrative surgery. It's quite expensive, and it's become something of an industry. This is not to say that it's not effective for many people. It is. But you have to go in with your eyes open. The caller was quite happy with the results. She's only 2 years out from the surgery, though. There is not a lot of long-term data of how she would feel maybe in 15 or 20 years. So we don't really know what the long-term effects of this surgery are. An increasing number of people are clamoring for it.
And is it typically covered by insurance?
That's an interesting question. In fact, it often is covered by insurance. By contrast, a lot of preventative measures, such as diet and exercise program or counseling, professional counseling for weight loss, is not covered by insurance. So there's actually a controversy about this among people who treat eating disorders. Why do we cover this very expensive surgery, $15,000 to $20,000 a pop, plus other expenses, when we don't cover, say, weekly trips to the nutritionist? That's a big sort of sociological question.
Well, drugs are another option to which some who are seriously obese are turning, but how effective are they, and are they safe? Dr. Robert Berkowitz joins us now from the University of Pennsylvania campus. He's an associate professor of psychiatry and pediatrics at the University of Pennsylvania and the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. It's good of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
Good afternoon.
What are the most commonly prescribed medications today for obesity?
There are three medications that are approved by the Food and Drug Administration. One is Meridia, which is produced by Abbott Laboratories. Another is Xenical, which is a fat-blocking drug, really the only true fat-blocking drug, and that's produced by Huffman La Roche. And there's a third older drug called Phentermine, which is produced by a number of companies since it's now generic. Meridia, which is sibutramine, and Phentermine, both are medications that help reduce the appetite and help people control their hunger levels. And that's very different from Xenical, which tries to and does block about a third of the fat from being absorbed that a person eats.
Mm-hmm. We just have a few seconds left in this segment of the program, but can you summarize how effective they are?
They're all moderately effective. There is a subgroup in each drug category, however, where patients get a pretty good effect. And these are often patients who will lose, on average, 10% of their body weight. And about 40% of patients who take these medications can achieve a pretty good weight loss with the medicines, in particular when they're combined with behavior modification procedures aimed at improving their eating and exercise.
Well, stay with us, if you would, Dr. Berkowitz. Also still with us is Ellen Ruppel-Schell, the author of The Hungry Gene. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll take more of your calls about the option of turning to surgical procedures and drugs once all else fails in the fight against obesity. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing surgical and medical techniques, which are being increasingly used by some people as tools in the fight against the obesity epidemic. Our guests are Ellen Ruppelschell. She's the author of The Hungry Gene, The Science of Fat and the Future of Thin. And also with us, Dr. Robert Berkowitz, Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Pediatrics at the University of Pennsylvania and the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. If you have used surgery or medication to assist you in weight loss, give us a phone call and tell us your story and tell us whether they worked for you. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. And let's get a caller on the line, and Andrea joins us from Charlotte, North Carolina.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a family physician in Charlotte, and I see patients who are either Medicaid, Medicare, or uninsured, and a lot of these patients don't have access to financially to some of these medications, and certainly not the surgery that was discussed earlier.
Mm-hmm.
But I found in my 4 years being a family physician that I've had very little success with the medications for those patients who have the insurance to afford it. They might lose weight initially, but you know, really in the long run, the behavior is still there, and they're not able to keep the weight off.
Dr. Berkowitz, what about those 2 points? First of all, how expensive are they? And second of all, what about Andrea's point about they don't necessarily keep the weight off?
Well, regarding the first point, the current medications, Meridia and Zenical, are moderately expensive. It's about $3, $3.50 a day. And many insurance companies don't reimburse for these medications, despite the fact that they've been successful in controlled trials. I think that's really a bias against obesity as a disease. And obesity is as a real disease as any other disease.
Mm-hmm.
And
doesn't help Andrea's patients, though.
I can tell you in the control trials and in our own work, we combine the use of medication with a moderately intensive lifestyle modification program where the patients are seen initially weekly for about 3 months, and then they're seen every other week for a few months, and then once a month. And in those trials, many patients do pretty well. And in our own report of April, we reported in a group of very overweight adolescents that about 40% of them lost 10% or more of their starting weight. So the average weight loss in that group of responders was about 15 kilograms. So that's about a little more than 30 pounds, and that's a pretty good result in adolescents. But again, they were these treatment trials are done when combining the medication with a lifestyle change program. And so it's difficult in a office practice to see people as frequently as needs to be done in order to help them change their health habits. And these medications are approved for use as an adjunct only to lifestyle modification.
Well, let's hear from Andrea about that.
Sure.
What did you think?
Well, yeah, it's very hard to change lifestyle habits, and I think we really do need to concentrate on children and adolescents so that those bad behaviors don't get started, because they're almost impossible to turn around. That's my experience, and we just don't seem to have the support staff to help us with the intensive nutritional education and exercise therapy and that sort of thing.
You know,
and
I personally feel
that exercise is a huge part of this whole puzzle, and just not enough Americans are exercising or walking or doing what they need to do physically.
Ellen Ruppelschell, you were trying to get in there?
I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to. I think Andrea's experience is one that has been experienced by many, many physicians across the country. While, yes, in laboratory and trials, in laboratories, controlled studies, these drugs can be effective, say, to lose in a subgroup of people, maybe 10% of weight over a period of a year, perhaps, they are not very successful for most people over the long term. They can jumpstart a weight loss program, perhaps for some, but they're quite expensive, and they have side effects. So the question of whether these can be useful to a large number of Americans or people around the world is a really important question, especially when you're talking about a $3 a day plus cost for these medications, when you're talking about, at best, a 10% weight loss. And again, this is only a subset, and again, this is for a limited period of time. So Andrea's experience, I think, is the reality of the usefulness of these drugs.
Dr. Berkowitz, are there side effects? Andrea, by the way, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate
it. Thank you.
Are there side effects to these drugs?
Well, I think the main side effect one worries about medicines like phentermine or Meridia, which is sibutramine, is elevations in blood pressure. And, of course, blood pressure is monitored carefully. And there are a few percentage of people, perhaps 10%, who can't tolerate the medication because their blood pressure goes up. With Xenical, the side effects are relatively related to the gastrointestinal system because more fat is in the intestine. People have somewhat more GI side effects. But if they consume a low-fat diet, the side effects are relatively manageable. I think the problem is not necessarily, or the difficulty is not necessarily the use of the medications. It's combining it with an intensive lifestyle modification program that is not reimbursable under the existing healthcare structure. And so the average patient that's seen in a family practitioner's office can't get reimbursed for also seeing a nutritionist or a lifestyle modification expert, such as a behavioral psychologist. And in the studies that are approved, there are weight losses up to 2 years in controlled trial that are pretty good weight losses. Remember, this is a population that generally is not the population that's going to get surgery. This is that population sort of in the middle obesity group that's somewhat overweight, that who is not yet heavy enough to be treated with surgery. I think we need to spend a little more time on prevention, that we're in a Western culture that promotes overeating and too little exercise. And on a public health basis, prevention has really got to be beefed up in a public health way to help Americans eat fewer calories, less fat, get more exercise, watch less TV, and be more positive about their healthy habits. And I think that will help the whole culture terrifically well, including children. And so the efforts aimed at trying to get kids to be more physically active again and to eat more fruits and vegetables and less junk food and watch less TV are all in the right direction. Certainly school-based programs to help do this as well as what's needed.
Dr. Berkowitz, thanks very much. Dr. Robert Berkowitz is Associate Professor of Psychiatry and Pediatrics at the University of Pennsylvania and the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and he joined us from the University of Pennsylvania campus. And Ellen Ruppel-Shell, we know we've got to let you go fairly soon, but I did want to ask, you know, is the use of drugs and surgery, you know, as we think about it, is this, you know, part of our passion for, you know, instant gratification, instant results, part of our, you know, that part of our culture? Or are people, do you see evidence, really trying to, you know, exert some self-control and diet and exercise?
I think this is a problem that's going to be very difficult to solve on an individual basis. One physician I talked to who specializes in gastric bypass surgery and is very, very good at it described it this way. He called it barbaric. It's something that he does, and he does it professionally every single day of his life, and he's very sad that he has to do it. It's very drastic. The drugs, we do know, have side effects. Raising blood pressure in people who are overweight and obese is not a good idea. If that's a side effect of Meridia, it's not one that people want to have. So these are not great solutions to the problem. What science has showed us is that the food that we have created in the United States, the processed food, the high concentration of calories, fat, sugars, is not something that many of our bodies were really adapted to deal with. And so for many of us, it's very difficult for us to control our consumption of these things. Mm-hmm. It's particularly made true when we don't exercise very much, because we were built to exercise, and when we don't, it's very difficult for us to decrease our eating enough to compensate for our sedentary lifestyles.
We have an email just on that point from Chris. He wonders, how do the success rates of drugs and surgery compare with medically supervised diet and exercise? I'm overweight, he says, 6'2", 270. I hear other heavyweights say, I've tried everything, and yet, he writes, I seem to be the only fat guy at the gym and on the bike path. I'm concerned that the tried everything people are turning to drugs and surgery in place of exercise and portion control.
You know, listen, people who are able to exercise, it's terrific. And people who are able to control what they eat, it's terrific. The problem with the public health aspect is not enough of us are able to do that. And that's why such programs as the one that Tommy Franks announced today, where they're going to, for example, in Boston, encourage the school children to reduce their watching of television by two hours a day. 2 hours a day is still a lot of television, but it sure beats what a lot of kids are watching today in the United States. They're getting bombarded with food advertising for just those sorts of foods that are difficult for us to consume in a responsible level, considering how we evolved as human beings. So this is a very great, this is a great approach. It's a public health approach. And I think coupled with individual efforts and exertion of willpower, we really could get a handle on this. In fact, I think we really can turn the tide on this as long as we take a multi-pronged approach and not depend on any one way.
You mentioned Tommy Franks. He, of course, was the leader in a different kind of battle altogether.
I'm so sorry.
Tommy Thompson is who we're talking about.
Tommy Thompson is a slip.
Thanks very much for being with us, Ellen Ruppel-Schell. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Ellen Ruppel-Schell is the author of The Hungry Gene, The Science of Fat and the Future of Thin, and a professor of journalism at Boston University. Surgery is an option for treating obesity, is supposed to be for the morbidly obese, but the demand for bariatric procedures is growing. Perhaps it's because people are getting more comfortable with the idea of it, as familiar figures like Al Roker of The Today Show on NBC and Sharon Osbourne of MTV's The Osbournes undergo the knife. Last year, 80,000 procedures were performed. The number is expected to grow to 120,000 this year. But how safe are they, and are they really a solution? Dr. Rudy Leibel joins us now. He's an obesity expert and the deputy director of the New York Obesity Research Center in Manhattan. He's with us by phone from his office in New York, and good to have you on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
So who's getting these kind of procedures?
Generally, the individuals who are undergoing bariatric surgery, as it's referred to, are individuals who are in what we call the super obese or pathologically or morbidly obese category. This generally means a so-called body mass index, which is a ratio of weight to height over 40.
Mm-hmm.
So just to give you an idea, BMI of 40 would be present in a woman, say, 5 feet tall and 220 pounds, a man, 6 feet, about 300 pounds. These are the sort of thresholds, at least have been, for the application of bariatric surgery.
And I, as I understand it, there are three types, stomach band, gastric bypass, and stomach staple.
That's right. The stomach staple is one of the early procedures. It's not done anymore. It's used to, when it was done, it simply involved making a very small pouch in the stomach through which food had difficulty passing, so that it was difficult to eat an awful lot at a single sitting. That procedure has been supplanted or replaced by something which is called a Roux-en-Y gastric bypass, which includes the pouch but also has the geometry of the small bowel rearranged in a way that actually excludes about 100 centimeters of small bowel, so that the Roux-en-Y gastric bypass really involves a combination of a stomach staple and some malabsorptive procedure, which is achieved by the restriction of some of the small bowel from seeing any of the food that you ingest. And there's actually a third technique, which is newer and has just started to be used, which is called the duodenal switch, which it'd be hard for me to describe it to you over the...
And I'm not sure I want to hear it.
That's right. This is a more radical procedure and actually is, of the surgeries, the most effective in terms of subsequent weight loss.
We're talking about obesity, part four in our series. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller involved. Jane joins us on the line from Oklahoma City.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I just, one of the procedures that I hadn't heard mentioned, and I tuned in a little bit later, was what I had done in June. I had the adjustable gastric band.
The so-called lap band?
Yes, sir, I did. And
how's it working out?
It is, well, I lost 40 pounds since June the 9th, and I was not morbidly obese. My BMI was 38. But I had a myriad of other health problems along with being on yo-yo diets for probably since I was 24 years old, which was 13 years ago. And one of the things that I really thought was interesting was that I could get diet pills wherever I wanted. And one of the diet pills that the physicians that were on earlier did not mention was Bontril, which is a heavy-duty, I think it's an amphetamine if I'm not mistaken. And I was on that. It threw me into a manic phase. I ended up in the hospital. So this time when I gained the 65 pounds back, I knew that I could not rely on diet pills anymore, thus the seemingly drastic measure of the gastric band. It's been a lifesaver.
Well, Dr. Leibel, get a comment from you.
Yeah, I should have mentioned that. That's, I guess, in the list would be number four, the so-called laparoscopic or gastric band, which can be done by a fairly non-invasive procedure, that is through a laparoscope as opposed to opening the abdomen and actually operating on the internal part, so to speak. And this involves an inflatable band, which can be adjusted by injecting material under the skin that goes into the band and varying the amount of restriction around the stomach. That procedure routinely produces about a 20% or so weight loss. There has been some substantial weight regain in many of the patients who have had the laparoscopic band. The results have been good in trials described in the European and Australian communities, perhaps not quite as good for reasons I'm not sure of in efforts to apply it in the United States, but your caller certainly seems to have had a very positive result.
Well, it really achieves what it's supposed to. It really completely, and you know, I wish through my adult life that I could have done it without the band. Eat only when I'm hungry. I mean, I absolutely cannot eat more than a certain amount. It does not work anymore, you know, which is, you know, there's sometimes when you sit down and you see a big amount of food, you realize I didn't have brain surgery, I only had stomach surgery.
Jane,
so,
thanks.
And my brain is saying, oh, my gosh, that looks so good. I'm going to really enjoy this. And a quarter of a cup to two-thirds of a cup later, I am saying, I have to leave now because I have to go to bed. You know, you just cannot overeat anymore.
Well, Jane,
so it's completely done what it's supposed to do.
Continued good luck to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We just have a few seconds left with you, Dr. Leibel, and I wanted to ask you about the future. Are the new devices out there, are there promising new techniques that you're hearing about?
There's a technique which is just now in sort of trial status, which is called gastric pacing, which involves actually stimulating some of the nerves that leave the stomach and go towards the brain. This is the vagus nerve. This technique, which is supposed to cause satiety to occur earlier, may turn out to be another useful means of approaching the problem of obesity.
Satiety, you mean the feeling of fullness?
The feeling of fullness, yes. I think the important thing to recognize here, I heard a little bit of the other conversation, is that this is a very complex problem. Some of it clearly is due to changes in the environment, but other aspects of it have to do with individual differences in biology. And I think ultimately what we're going to come to is different approaches in different individuals with also the sort of public health approaches that will help to bring the weight of the population down generally. There are still going to be people like those who've been calling in, or at least some of those, who are not going to be responsive to conventional or public health manipulations. And for them, I think we're going to need, ultimately, very effective pharmacologic agents, drugs.
Dr. Leibel, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
When we come back, it is Camp David at 25. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.